The following was recorded in front of a live studio audience at the Studio 21 Podcast Cafe. This is the United Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Quirky Dog Podcast, inspired by some of the quirkiest dogs you can ever imagine and the owners who love them. This podcast is brought to you by the quirky couple themselves, Scott and Jess Williams. Their aim is to educate and entertain. Here's Scott and Jess.
Welcome, guys, and happy Wednesday. Today we have a very exciting episode in store, but first we're going to start with the quirky tip of the day. All right, our quirky tip of the day is brought to you by none other than Biogen Pets. And today I want to impart that if you are concerned if the cloning process includes any GMO or not, it does not. When there is cloning that Biogen Pets does, it does not involve any changing or altering of your pet's genetic material in any way. That's a common question that people have. Our actual quirky tip, however, is to purchase this amazingly awesome book. We got this on Amazon. It's Livestock Protection Dogs, Selection, Care, and Training. And it is authored by our guest here today. So we have Arisha here joining us, and she was actually the author of this book. And we've been wanting to do a podcast on guardian dogs for quite a long time, but we didn't have enough knowledge ourselves. So we brought in one of the best of the best. So welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. I'm honored.
So tell us a little bit about your history as it relates to, you know, guardian dogs and these livestock protection dogs and everything else, and kind of how this book came to be.
Yes. I'm not exactly sure when this all started, but I think I've always loved animals anyway, and especially dogs. And so we didn't, my family didn't, you know, have a dog because they didn't, you know, they thought they were kind of dirty or whatever. So I stuck with it. So wherever I am, there's going to be a dog. So, but this particular type of dog, I learned about it in an area where the people were using these dogs to keep their sheep and their cattle and whatever other, you know, animals that you know, whether they were pets or dogs, other animals that needed to be kept safe from any of the
predators, anything.
Predators. Thank you. Predators. Yes, of course. And so I really thought that was quite interesting. And I thought that's really great. I mean, so I started, you know, just learning about these dogs, and I was in, I'm trying to remember the place that I was.
Well, in your defense, it was quite a while ago. This was first published in 1990, right? It was.
So this goes back
quite a while. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was. I'm just trying to think of the people that were there. But it was Let me see. They had wolves. They had, you know, all kinds of different red predators that were, you know, killing their stock. And so I don't know how it started at the very beginning, but I think it has to happen with people who, you know, tamed the dogs. I mean, the dogs were occasionally, you know, they were pretty, you know, they were really
wild. Yeah.
Wild, yes, and so they over the centuries they were able to tame them and teach them not to hurt the cattle, or, you know, obviously because these are still there, whatever it is, you know, sheep or, you know, or chickens or whatever. So yeah, and because it's the same for me, you know, I had animals on my farm. I didn't, you know, it wasn't a big farm, but it was something that I really loved. And, you know, losing cattle or any of the animals that, you know, you're taking care of is really, well, for one thing, it can be very harmful for people who are, you know, that they need to, you know, make a living from
right.
that.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So they, anyway, but I guess for me too, I just loved being around dogs and other animals. And mostly for me, it was sheep because that's what I had, and, you know, and a few chickens and things like that. But, and then I realized that there were a whole bunch of these dogs, different ones, but they all did the same kind of work. And so I started learning, you know, which of them are doing work in the mountains and others that were in different parts of the, you know, anywhere in Europe and in the world, really.
Yeah.
Because that was definitely part of, you know, the way the people were going to, you know, make a living and survive. So that was a very, very, you know, the thing that had to be that these animals were able to not, you know, be tempted to kill and eat.
Yeah. So no, it's true.
They were fed well and, you know, so, you know, even before the kibble and all that stuff, you know, it was,
right.
you know, whatever kind of animal or whatever they could get their hands on. But so, yeah, so I was just fascinated by all the different ones. And I realized, I mean, I actually made a little read or looked up all of these. How many breeds?
It was about 18, a dozen or so there, huh?
Yes, 18 different breeds
yeah.
in Europe and in that part of the world. And they're similar. Some of them are similar. You know, some of them have the same colors. They're built a little bit differently. They're actually were, you know, people, you know, getting them so that they could do the job that, you know, they wanted and with the animals that the farmers, you know, had there. So they wanted to have dogs that would, you know, good work well with whatever the farmer had.
Yeah, sure. Completely. And I think an important thing to note about all of these dogs, and I have a list here, it somewhat cross-references what your list is in the book, but we're talking dogs like Great Pyrenees, the Kuvas, the Tibetan Mastiffs, the Commodore, you know, these type of dogs, they're all very large. They have a big presence to them. And that's kind of part of it. If you're going to have wolves coming in to, you know, a herd of sheep and they want to kill the sheep, these dogs have to have presence and they have to, you know, have some edge to them. But they also, as you mentioned, they can't be aggressive towards the sheep or towards the chickens or towards the animals that they're guarding. So they have a very specific purpose in the dog kingdom. And in this day and age, there are still many guardian dogs and livestock protection dogs working, like, you know, 24 hours a day, they're out there and they're working. And I think another thing to make note of is a lot of these dogs have pretty hefty coats because yeah. you may have a herd of, you know, sheep up in Canada. It's pretty cold out there.
Well, they're out there in all the elements too.
They have to be there, you know, for the rain, everything else. They don't just come in and then, you know, hope the best for these herds of sheep and chickens and everything. So they have a very specific purpose. And Scott was just really
the first thing that got me thinking about these dogs again was I had not eaten meat for several years. I was on more of a vegan diet. And I wanted to, and I started working out at the gym and I wanted to get more protein. I wanted to start eating meat again. And Jess said, I don't want you buying meat at the grocery store. If you're going to get meat, I want you to get it from a farmer. So I found a local farmer that was raising a beef herd and chicken. And we went over there and he had these dogs out in his field that were mm-hmm. protecting the cattle there.
Yeah.
And, he said he's had a little bit of hassle from the neighbors on occasion because, like, the dogs are doing what they're supposed to be doing, but we have coyotes, and coyotes will come down and try and steal a sheep or something. And these dogs will just start barking and chasing them out. It could be 2 a.m, and the dogs are now barking and chasing a coyote off of the field, you know, which is what they're supposed to do. But he said the neighbors sometimes are not too crazy about that, you know, but his farm has been there for 100 years. And it's now that everything is becoming more urban. It's like those type of things. Oh, this is a big hassle. We don't want you doing that, you know?
Yeah, I know.
But that's what got me thinking about these protection dogs, the guardian protection dogs again. And then here's another thing that got that helped how I found you is that I was watching a YouTube video on a homesteader, because a lot of people are homesteading, becoming more independent, less dependent on the government, the electrical grid, everything. They just want to be self-sustaining. Sure. And this woman had a list of recommended books, and this was on her list. It was like the Bible for guardian dogs. Like, this is the book to get if you want to get a guardian. If you want to get a puppy and raise it the right way, because if you get the right breed but you don't raise the dog the right way, they're not going to work.
That's right. Yeah.
So you don't want to raise it like a pet dog on the couch with you and your kids all the time. It's not going to want to be out in the field doing what it's supposed to be doing, you know?
These dogs go to school.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're out in the different farms, and also they need to understand that they can't, you know, hurt smaller bees like chickens and ducks and that kind of thing. Yeah. So it is a little bit tricky sometimes when, you know, people are trying to train the dogs, like, you know, no, that's not to eat. Ours.
Yeah.
You mentioned about when they're going through that adolescent stage, when they have a lot of energy and they're more prone to do stupid stuff, and you just got to guide them along, and ideally...
Human.
Like, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's important. These dogs don't come pre-programmed. They do need a certain level of training and everything else. And there are very specific breeds that are bred to serve out this purpose. And, you know, that's why it's a very select few. But we're seeing more Great Pyrenees as pet dogs now. We're seeing more of these breeds. People think, oh, it's this big, white, fluffy teddy bear. Well, if you're going for the look, maybe a Samoyed is a better choice for the house than a Great Pyrenees. Because these dogs have, you know, centuries of genetics in them that are bred for a very specific purpose. And they do have a certain amount of edge, and they do have, you know, a certain level of threshold tolerance and everything else. So you had experience with them yourself. You had visited in Europe and learned more about them there. When did the book kind of take shape? Did you have a goal that you wanted to write this book? Or as you did more research, you thought this is fascinating. How did that come to be?
Well, I think it was partly, you know, when going in Europe, we're going into all the different fields and places, and realizing how much that would help the people like in the U.S. and in Canada and so forth, that's when I thought, you know, well, you know, I did actually earlier on, I would you know, take my dogs and get them trained properly, and take, you know, I'd go to, you know, these things. So we,
like, seminars and stuff like that, or
And I thought, well, you know, they need to be, you know, trained some way, and I just thought that would be a really wonderful thing to do. I mean, that was all. They've been doing this for a long time. They have, you know, the shepherds have their own ways of, you know, making sure that the dogs are not going to eat the animals or hurt any people, like by kids or anything like that. So it was very, I thought, oh, that's what I was really, really interested in, to have a way that, you know, you could train them and have them happy.
Sure.
It's not anything that's not really normal, because that's what they do. I mean, that's, you know, they take care of, you know, their own puppies and stuff. So it can be challenging sometimes. There are some dogs that are really not really, really happy about that. But again, that's what I realized, that people that didn't have that,
They didn't have the guidance.
Yeah. So to give them something that they could do, they could follow, you know, a sort of way of how you start them when they're puppies, and what you don't do. And it's not that easy anyway, because every dog is an individual, and they are, you know, going to have certain, you know, things that they are good at or bad at or whatever, you know. So it's being aware of when you see certain things that they do, you can look at their ears, what they're doing, and you can say, oh, this dog is about to, you know, do something that, you know, not, you know, he's stalking or something like that.
Sure. Yeah, so, no, it's a great guidance. And Scott was even saying, we were talking on the way over here, that, you know, it's a great read for people who even aren't interested in guardian dogs and everything else. A lot of the stuff applies to just raising a basic pet dog and, you know, a puppy who's going to be a well-adjusted member of society someday as a dog. So it has a lot of nice little gems in it. And even though it was originally written in the 90s, and I think this new edition came out in 2004, so it's over 20 years ago, there's a lot of good, solid information in there that people can, you know, kind of internalize and take what they like from, I think.
Yeah,
they can. And the different breeds also have different, you know, ways of.
Yeah. You so know, I was going to say one thing I like, not to interrupt you, but we, Jess and I have Border Collies. I have a Belgian Malinois. So we have herders, you know, and we do a lot of dog sports with herders. But I was laughing when I was reading about how you say you don't want your guardian protection dog watching the herders. Because they're going to start running around biting these lambs in the butt or the sheep, because that's what the herders do. But that's not what the guardian dogs are supposed to do. They're just supposed to hang out.
It's just a hangout.
Yeah.
They're cool.
Yeah.
They're.
So they can learn a lot of bad habits by chasing around other dogs and all that stuff, you know, and playing.
Yeah, that's right.
And the other thing I liked, and I mentioned this briefly before we went on air, but we have – one of the main problems that I see with, because I train people's dogs every day, today I saw two dogs before I got here, is a lot of the separation anxiety, a lot of general anxiety in dogs now. And at one point you said with your with the guardian dogs, when you get these puppies, you don't want them to have too much house time with the kids on the couch, and you should put a pen on the other side of the barn and let them have their alone time so that they're just comfortable hanging out.
Yeah.
And I feel like people should be doing that with their regular dogs now, because these dogs become so needy, they can't even handle being alone. If the people leave the house, the dogs are going crazy. They eat the couch, they pee and poop everywhere. They're so stressed out. You know, they have had no alone time at all, you know? So it was interesting where you don't want a guardian dog to get too dependent and too comfortable being in the house all the time. You could take that little lesson to a smaller degree with all dogs. Because it used to be we trained all dogs were like that.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a different world now.
It is, yeah. I mean, yeah, so many dogs are spoiled. I mean, you know, the treats and that's, you know, but sometimes that's good because you can use that for training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right?
For these are the things you get if you're a good puppy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just good to have a good balance. And if people are going to set up an X-Pen for their puppy, setting it up across the room from you is probably smarter than right next to you while you're on the couch so you can pet it the whole time. You know, we want all animals to be able to be independent in a certain sense. And, you know, all of these livestock protection dogs, they're larger dogs. And it also means they mostly have a shorter life expectancy too. So it's important that we like maximize the time in their puppyhood to make sure they can be working and ready to be in the field as soon as possible. Because obviously the larger breeds, the giant breeds, they just don't last till 15 years old like some other breeds, you know? So what age would you say that you could have these dogs like actually out working and independent? Did it vary? What would be like an age range where you would be like ready to release them out to be doing their job on their own?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I guess part of it has to do with, you know, what they are actually doing. Like, I mean, what animals they're taking care of. And so there are some differences when you're trying to, you know, get them going. And like some that like maybe are okay with sheep, but they're not so good with a chicken. And so it is tricky because I just watching the dog and watching how it did, you know, when it didn't see me looking at them, and seeing how they performed, in between each other and with the animals that they were in and that sort of thing. But yeah, and it's always really good to make sure that early on they get to know or understand that they can't run after
Yes.
After and play with the, you know, the animals.
Yes. So you would you say when they're a year old, maybe 18 months, by 2 years, what would you say is a general age range where you think that they're ready to work on their own? Can you hear me? Did she lose us? Okay. And then the other thing I was going to say is you talked about them working in a group. Do you think, are there normally like two or three? How many, do we just have one individually? Like if they're working, do they kind of work as a pack? I guess I'm not so sure about that. When we went to that one farm.
He had a couple there.
Yeah, there were two of them. So is it common that they work in pairs or so?
They can. Yeah.
Okay.
It depends on the dogs again, you know, the individual and the breed.
And the size of the space.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Yeah, that's also very, you know, important that they have enough, you know, they need to have some area around them that's free. Yeah, but they're all individual too. That's what makes it so tricky. You know, you can't say just because you did work with this one particular dog that, you know, that another dog, even of the same, you know, type, is doing something completely different, not maybe completely different, but different, you know? So
yeah.
I think it's really up to us people that keep these dogs to understand and make sure that they're using them properly as far as the work that they do. You know, if you try to force these dogs, I mean, some of them will you know, give in, but as others, you know, just get really nasty.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and they're bred for a specific purpose. You know, I mean, you really want to research why they originally were put out here and how serious their job really is. Because if they're going to be, you know, warding off a pack of coyotes from, you know, a few sheep, that's a pretty serious dog. That's going to be a dog with a lot of presence in your home. And they may carry that over into, you know, the electric man coming to check your meter as well. Like, you just want to be aware that these dogs do have definitely a lot more presence and a lot more edge than some other dogs.
Yeah. I mean, what I've run into the most often is the Great Pyrenees. And quite mm-hmm. often it's a rescue situation. Yeah. So the dog has come from somewhere else. They got it from a rescue. And maybe it's a second or third home. And usually, you know, here's a dog that's bred to be out in a field and doing this type of work, or, you know, and they're in a small living space.
Yeah.
And they become protective of their small little family there. And they start having issues with people coming to the house, the children bringing kids over, all that stuff. And they want to fix that. But really, we're talking, this is the nature of the dog. I mean, sometimes it's better to just put the dog in a crate or remove them if you're having people come into the house that they don't know. It would be much safer and easier for everybody instead of trying to make the dog into something that he's not.
Exactly. That's something that people really need to, you know, really understand.
Yeah.
Because forcing them, they're going to be, you know, not happy. They're, you know, it's not going to work. So it's you have to be on your toes with these dogs. I mean, most of them work just fine, but there are a few of them that, you know, some of them have to go too. Some of them are just you know, going to be too dangerous. If they were got away with lots of things, you know, that people were watching them, you know, so that's one of those things. And the thing is, you do have to put in the time. You have to understand that, you know, they do need that kind of, you know,
structure.
And
a strong foundation, which people are going to find in this book. And also, you know, we're talking about a large breed. These large breeds, they have a big bite too. So it's worth noting, like, you know,
that's right. No, you've got very right.
You got to be conscious of these dogs and respect these dogs. Well, I'm so glad that Scott crossed paths with this book. We've both really enjoyed it. Again, if you guys are interested in it, we bought ours on Amazon, but it's The Livestock Protection Dogs Selection, Care, and Training. And it is authored by Orisha herself. And we think it's a great book. We think it's a great resource out there for any dog owner. And we really appreciate you sharing it with the world.
Well, thank you for having me. And I'm always happy when people can, you know, get to that kind of that point. Yeah.
Before you leave, I just wanted to mention that you've published other books. Are you still writing? Or because didn't you do a children's book about that involved dogs as well?
Yeah, I had one on dogs. Yeah. Yeah, that one, I can't remember. I have a really bad memory.
That's okay.
Me too.
I'm going to email you and I'm going to make sure that all the links are in the description and people can find everything. But our main focus here today was the livestock protection dogs. So thank you so much for joining us and sharing all of your knowledge about guardian dogs. I think it's an important topic to point out. And we just don't have enough guardian dog experience to talk about it on our own. So we had to invite an expert.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. I'm glad that people are still using these wonderful dogs. So, well,
thanks for coming on today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and the homesteaders, they're shouting out. They think that this is a top 10 read. So we really enjoyed it. You guys will enjoy it too. Thank you guys so much for joining us here today. I hope that you learned a little something more about guardian dogs. If you have any questions, you can email us at studio@thequirkydog.com. And in the meantime, keep it quirky. Thanks so much, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The views and opinions expressed by the hosts, guests, or callers of this program do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Studio 21 Podcast Cafe, the United Podcast Network, its partners or affiliates.